It's Friday, December 19th, 2008, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to Friday. We made it to the end of another long week, and I hope you're all getting ready for whatever holiday celebration you choose to celebrate this coming week, and whatever it is, I hope it's a good one for you. Now, coming up on today's Stash, we're going to continue our look at pain management with cannabis, but before we do, I want to dig into our polls for just a moment, the Stash Pot Quiz that we've been putting up on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. It's been really interesting getting the questions answered from those of you out in the cannabis community. One of the topics we've been following this week has been about President-elect Barack Obama and his stance on marijuana and whether or not we will see any positive reform in cannabis law. So I've had a few questions up on the Stash, and the results have been quite interesting. I asked if you believed that more than 1 million marijuana arrests per year would happen in Barack Obama's first term as president. Now remember, we're already up to 872,000 arrests per year, so it's not very far to go to a million. With 204 votes in, 57% of you said no, Obama will make marijuana enforcement a lower priority, while 43% of you said yes, we're at 872,000 already, and it keeps rising. Now, more specifically to this recent question at change.gov that Barack Obama kind of dismissed with a one-sentence answer, we asked, when Obama's transition team answered, President-elect Obama is not in favor of the legalization of marijuana, they meant, and I was trying to find out whether you thought he really was against legalizing marijuana or if he just didn't want to spend political capital on it. With 65 of you voting on it, 83% of you say it's a matter of political capital and not that Barack Obama is so against marijuana. Another question asked, Barack Obama promised change we can believe in. When it comes to cannabis in the Obama administration, 58% of the 106 voters who voted said we will see progressive reform in drug law, especially a new tolerance for cannabis, while 42% of you said you're smoking too much hope if you think this administration is going to enact progressive reform in drug law. It's very interesting getting these opinions, but it seems to be about 60% of you out there still are holding out some hope for the Obama administration to do something positive with regards to cannabis and politics. Well, he's not even in the office yet, so let's just keep an eye out and keep writing your congressmen and your senators, and even write or call the president. Let him know how you feel. Now, like I mentioned, we are talking about cannabis and chronic pain this week, and normally on Friday we'd be catching up with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Unfortunately, Steve was really busy today and I was unable to get a recording time with him for the podcast. But never fear, that just means we get a double dose of the chronic pain subject. We're going to start with Dale Gehringer, the coordinator of California Normal, and his experiences in helping patients dealing with chronic pain and some of the sad things that have happened to them because of their use of cannabis. Then we'll follow up with Douglas Hyatt, a criminal defense attorney in Seattle, Washington, talking about his experiences with patients suffering from chronic pain and how they've been kicked off of their opiate medications because of testing positive for THC. It's an extra special stash and the culmination of our chronic pain management series. Check our podcast from Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for more interviews on the subject of chronic pain. Also, don't forget that you can always email me here at stash@normal.org. I get some amazing emails from you listeners out there, and from time to time I like to share one, like I shared the Marines marijuana story just a couple of days ago. That's gotten a lot of feedback from the listeners as well. So if you've got a story to tell, send it in to me at stash@normal.org. Okay, folks, that's enough introduction. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of it. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Could Obama's pro-marijuana commerce secretary spell a golden era for pot reform? From the Alternet. President-elect Barack Obama nominated New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson to his cabinet as Secretary of Commerce. Given that Obama has already confessed to inhaling, that was the point he classically cracked, and once declared the hyperbolically named war on drugs, quote, an utter failure, adding that America needed to, quote, rethink and decriminalize American cannabis laws, Richardson's nomination to Commerce was cause for celebration. After all, Richardson signed a bill in 2007 making New Mexico the 12th state to legalize medical marijuana. He said of the decision, quote, so what if it's risky? It's the right thing to do. My God, let's be reasonable, end quote. A mostly Democratic Congress and Richardson offer the best chance in years to fight this conundrum of using the Constitution's Commerce Clause to support marijuana prohibition. With Richardson at Commerce and Congress on the hunt for new sources of green, environmental and financial, during a time of deep economic recession, the launch window for legalization has never been wider. Rena Schapansky, director of New Mexico's chapter of Drug Policy Alliance, says, quote, Richardson was a strong champion for legal access to medical marijuana. In his role at the Commerce Department, he may be well positioned to examine the economic contributions of the medical cannabis sector to the economy in states that have medical cannabis laws, end quote. Well-positioned is right, but will Richardson exhibit the kind of spine he showed in the Democratic primary when his brave decision on medical marijuana in his own state caused him to stick out like a sore realist? While Richardson at Commerce could be helpful to our cause, I'm waiting to see how Daschle pans out at Health and Human Services. Tom Daschle's from South Dakota, the only state where a medical marijuana initiative has made it to the ballot and lost, albeit by a narrow 48-52% vote. As secretary, Daschle will set the tone for the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institutes of Health, and the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, agencies that directly affect the federal discussion on cannabis as a medicine. South Dakota State Representative, if you need medical marijuana, just make a black market connection and deal with it. An activist in South Dakota forwarded this email on to Normal. He was trying to find out how members of his legislature felt about medical marijuana. Today I called South Dakota Representative Gordon Howie in Rapid City, South Dakota. I asked if he'd support a medical cannabis bill. He said,
I'd need to see double-blind studies so the proof would be there conclusively.
Proof of?
Proof that it would be good for someone.
Good for someone not to suffer pain?
There are other medicines for pain.
They work for some people. Some people only get relief from cannabis. He said,
Look, if I had a medical condition that could only be helped by marijuana, I'd make a connection and get some marijuana. If it led to a problem, I'd just deal with it.
You mean, if you got arrested?
That's right. I'd deal with it. They can too.
Well, there's nothing quite like having your state elected officials endorsing criminal activity, huh? If you're arrested for taking care of your health, and you lose your liberty, your property, your student loans, your job, your licenses, your children, and your housing, just deal with it. Representative Howie, it would be wrong of me to wish that you would suddenly suffer a debilitating disease or injury for which marijuana is an effective treatment, so you would be forced to just deal with it. So I won't wish that. Maine marijuana advocate acquitted. Longtime marijuana advocate Donald Kristen was acquitted Thursday in Superior Court on cultivation and furnishing charges, convincing a jury that his pot is for medical purposes. Citing the state's medical marijuana law passed nearly a decade ago, Justice William Anderson told jurors that Kristen, organizer of the annual hemp stock festivals and founder of Maine Vocals, met the criteria for medical marijuana under the statute, his lawyer Walter McKee said. McKee said the case could set a precedent in Maine, where medical marijuana legislation was brought by Citizen Initiative in 1999. He said, quote, I think it's precedent-setting in that it's the first case that I'm aware of that went to trial in which the affirmative defense was raised. It's the first I've heard of, and I've certainly been around the mill, end quote. Kristen, 55, of Madison, faced a possible 5 years in prison had he been convicted on the felony charge of aggravated furnishing. He was charged additionally with aggravated cultivation, both stemming from his arrest in October 2007. The charges were aggravated because of Kristen's previous marijuana charges. Under Maine law, someone can legally cultivate, distribute, or possess marijuana for medical use if specified medical conditions exist, a point with which District Attorney Everett Fowle takes issue. Quote, This whole medical marijuana law, we need to go back to the drawing board. We need to first have a discussion as to whether there is any medical viability of marijuana, end quote. He said the medical viability of marijuana has not been proven. Most medical professionals, Fowle said, say there is very little medical viability for marijuana compared to other available treatments. No, Mr. Fowle, we do not need to go back to the drawing board. The medical viability of marijuana has been proven anecdotally by hundreds of thousands of patients in 13 states over 12 years now. Numerous health organizations approve of marijuana's medical use, and dozens of studies back them up. If you don't believe me, look it up for yourself. I've got them posted at the blog at stash.normal.org. The ones who need to go back to the drawing board are the police officers and district attorneys who can't seem to understand that when the people of a state make a law, it's their job to enforce it, not question it. Hey there, Stashers. How would you like to win a six-night trip to the most cannabis-friendly spot on Earth? That's right, a trip to Amsterdam for four, sponsored by the Normal Foundation. It's an exciting new fundraiser for our organization, partnering with Win for Charity to help us raise money so we can provide programs and services to normal members like you. Win for Charity is an online hosting solution for charitable organizations that allows us to harness the power of the internet to increase our fundraising ability. How do you win? Simple. Just go to www.winforcharity.com/normal. That's win, the number four, charity.com/NORML. Click your buy ticket now button, then just select normal as your charity. The vacation package includes 6 nights in an Amsterdam City hotel, including breakfast, entrance to the Rijksmuseum, and a canal bus day pass, round-trip airfare, private transfers from airport to hotel and hotel to airport, a full-day tour to Delft, The Hague, and Madurodam, and a full-day tour to the Windmills and Volendam. Get your tickets now at winforcharity.com/normal. Your ticket helps to support our organization, and you could win 6 nights in Amsterdam. All this week here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we've been concentrating on the subject of cannabis for pain management. And joining us now by telephone is Dale Gehringer, the coordinator for California Normal. Dale, welcome back to the Stash.
Good to be here.
Well, I wanted to get your opinions here and your experiences because, of course, you're in California. They're right in the center of where medical marijuana is happening. And so you've probably got the most experience of any state of people that have been using medical marijuana for chronic pain. And one of the things we found here in this topic this week is how people are being denied other medications because of their use of medical marijuana. Is that the case there in California? And could you tell us a little about it?
Well, yeah, it is, and there appears to be some sort of last-minute offensive by the government right now to cause more trouble to chronic pain patients in general. Here in the last couple weeks, we have heard several reports of valid medical marijuana patients, long-term medical marijuana users, who have been on both narcotics and their medical marijuana and have been suddenly drug tested, supposedly because DEA has been requesting pain clinics and other dispensers of controlled substances to drug test their clients.
I see.
And when they if they test positive for marijuana, as these patients have, they have been denied renewals of their prescriptions. I just talked to a woman here who had been going to a clinic for 5 years and was on really a fairly intense regimen of Percocet, which is an opiate, mainly for chronic pain. She had also been taking medical marijuana for about 5 years, not for pain, but for irritable bowel syndrome, which she suffers, rather severely. And all of a sudden, after 5 years of going to the same clinic, she was told, oh, you've got to take a drug test, which she did. And when she flunked, her clinic promptly denied her any renewal of her opiates, without which she starts suffering seizures. So basically, the DEA was forcing pain clinics to commit medical malpractice on the grossest, in the grossest sense. Withdrawal of opiates, of course, is a dangerous and contraindicated kind of treatment for chronic pain patients.
I would imagine.
And, and it makes no sense to cut off opiate users from marijuana because everything we've seen out here, and we've seen an awful lot of this, it shows that marijuana helps people who use narcotics to reduce their dosages in general. This is universally reported by doctors out here. Fred Gardner at O'Shaughnessy's has done an extensive survey of the leading medical cannabis doctors out here, and the one thing they report above all other things is that cannabis is used as a substitute for other more dangerous prescription narcotics and drugs. So this is really a totally backwards kind of treatment, and we're still trying to track down what's going on here.
Yeah.
Whether there's been a recent DEA directive to crack down in the waning days of the Bush administration or what, and we haven't gotten the answer yet. But this is going on.
Yeah. Now, what is the position of the state of California on this? This is a cannabis, of course, is legal in the state of California. Are their hands tied because of this being, you know, federal prescriptions?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Their hands are tied on this.
Mm. But they haven't come up with any position besides that, even though do they say one way or another do they condemn the federal government for these acts or anything?
No. Mm. This is sort of outside the normal purview of the legislature anyhow. It's really something that's dealt more with by malpractice law and things like that, by common law.
Okay. So another thing I'm wondering here is, there are some patients that also, for the purposes of covering themselves in other ways, go ahead and get the prescription for Marinol, the dronabinol pill. Is there any reports of that causing problems?
Yes. Now, this is an important new development. For many years, marijuana users have been taking Marinol as sort of a cover for marijuana use because marijuana will generate a positive test for THC and it's a legal prescription drug. So, so if you have a prescription for Marinol, the theory is, then, it'll be okay to test positive for THC. However, there is a test that can distinguish between THC and marijuana. It's an extra test they do, and they look for a couple of obscure components of marijuana that don't happen to be in Marinol. And for a long time, this test was very expensive and rarely used. So you could go to California Normals or Normals website, and you would even see advice as one way of avoiding unfair drug tests was to get a Marinol prescription as an excuse. In the last couple months, we've been hearing reports of regular drug testing, pre-employment drug testing programs, double-checking Marinol users to make sure that they are not using marijuana. This has been done, I know, by at least one nationwide lab that works for the Department of Transportation. So people who are in the DOT screening program are at definite risk of being detected for marijuana if they test positive for Marinol. And I just got another report a couple days ago from somebody who was being tested for work at Walmart, of all places. So this is a new and nasty development out there. Really shows how petty the drug testing industry can get in their drive for profits here. But you really have to question this use of healthcare resources to add this extra step, costly step that really has no medical point to it at all. The only point to it is basically to force obedience to the law. It's basically an authoritarian measure. It's not a health measure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that with this move, they've dropped all pretense of this being a safety issue. You know, it is just law enforcement. It is just compliance. Boy. Now, as we look at the patients now in the state of California that are using both cannabis, medical marijuana, and these opiate pain medications, what kind of advice can we give them as far as avoiding this crackdown, or is there anything they can do?
Well, I'm not certain yet. We're still investigating to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If we find that there's been some sort of a DEA directive about this, then, we may have to go to Congress or to the administration, the new incoming administration, and complain about this. But we don't really know where this is coming from at the moment. So it's premature, but we're going to keep this as an issue. This is really gross malpractice. It's torture. It's like administrative torture of patients. And I think it's got to be part of a larger a campaign here to expose this whole drug testing racket.
Yeah, and you know, just the effect, the practical effect of all of this, when you really think about it, is to get people on more opiate medications. Like you said, we have so much evidence of people being able to reduce their intake of opiate medications by a co-administration of cannabis. If you get them off the cannabis, you're just going to get them on more opiates, more addiction, and more harm to the body. It's so sad.
It is, and it's also, I think, testimony to the ignorance of the general medical establishment. I think if the AMA were a little bit more on the ball about this kind of thing and understood the medical value of marijuana, and if organized medicine got together and protested this, it would end. But the ignorance out there in mainstream medicine is still, you know, pretty amazing.
Well, we can look at the Medical Students Association. At least they're on our side, and they're the AMA of the future, I imagine. So we're going to make progress on this. I just wish it would come a little faster, especially for those patients that are suffering with pain.
And if anybody else out there knows of any reports of this kind of thing going on, we would appreciate them reporting it to Normal, because we are trying to keep track of this thing.
Absolutely. Send your emails to stash@normal.org. I'll make sure they get forwarded to Dale and to Alan at National Normal, and we'll shine a light on this. I think the more people hear about this, it's going to be harder for them to continue on with this draconian measure. Well, Dale Gehringer is the coordinator of California Normal and joining us from the Bay Area, let's just say.
Right.
Thanks for being here.
Okay, thank you, Russ.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. For today's Stash, I bring you Lower Velocity. Lower has ripped through New York's underground hip-hop music scene with poetic leisure, adding to his proficiently developed mural. Coming from a pure background of MC battles, club promotions, and graph writing, young Low found himself at the heart of a growing scene, sharing the stage with then-up-and-coming artists such as Sarah Jones, Mos Def, Mums, Talib Kweli, and Saul Williams at venues like the New Eurekan Poets Cafe and SOBs since 1996. Throughout, Lowe stayed busy in the studio, fine-tuning his recording skills and working with a wide range of artists. Check out more of Lower Velocity at myspace.com/lowervelocity. That's L-O-E-R, Velocity. This song is called So High, and it's from the album Ready for a Renaissance. Enjoy your Festivus weekend with Lower Velocity and So High.
The elevation's coming at you, head on direct. Close all doors and windows for the greenhouse effect. Breathing easy, I relax, welcome in the calling. Put the fire to the earth so I can start the global warming. It's typical of me to let it float and take it somewhere other than within the confines of the average numb air. I'm from where it's cold and air's thin. They say smoking as a habit makes it hard to catch a wind, but they're alive in attempts to keep me grounded. My psyche reaches distances when nothing's else around it. Steady in a class of its own, drifting up. I'm to the chest with this, I suggest you listen up.
I wanna
up.
Get high, so
and the heart rate decreases, the body starts to slump, thoughts become painted pieces, speckled on the grounds of conversation, looking Asian, slanted, the cipher creates the correlation, laid back, chalant's not likely, a righty, Rasta say, Talawami, small but mighty, touch the floor of elevation, stepping lightly, to leave a tomb without leaving the jewels, not likely, the hovering tools of the gods, such an instrument, beautifully exuding the rhythm of instant bent, an orthodox with my burning, a higher learning. Learning Dutch master, accelerating much faster. Where I let loose and glide, the turbulence is minimized for a smooth ride. All verticals will go, I flow and keep a stride with the wind beneath my feet. All funniness aside, for as far as I can see, where the hemisphere divides, drop the bass out and let's just deal with the highs so there's no bottom catching the fall of what's so mellow. The calm and serene is heavily influenced on my part on some other shit musically, like playing a cello in the dark, envisioning the metronome's mark, having by myself meetings that can go on and at the brink of dawn, I spark the feel that I feel. The crowd without a where's Brooklyn at, deliberating hard with the forces of gravity, inhaling at the opposite degree polarities of abstractness. I make a fence and raise it up, separate the Dutch, then retwist and blaze it up. I'm a bit far out of touch, I admit, sometimes these clouds do get thick, but I'm bird's eye view equipped, soaring overseen, an out of the box thinker, mind and spirit free. I'm up there, feather falling down, a velocity, the undercurrent.
I wanna get high, so
President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community, the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like
and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
Well, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check NORML.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
We're continuing our series here on the Daily Audio Stash, investigating the use of cannabis for patients that are suffering with chronic pain. And joining us now from Seattle, Washington, is attorney Doug Hyatt, who represents a lot of these patients when they get in trouble with the law. So, Doug, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Great to be here, Russ.
You know, this is something we've been covering all week, and it's just sad when we have people that are in chronic pain and they're using cannabis to help mitigate that chronic pain, and now we're finding cases of people being denied their opiate-based pain medications because of testing positive for cannabis. And I was just wondering if we could get your perspective on this and how this has affected the patients you deal with.
Well, it started out as a real problem in terms of educating folks about medical marijuana and marijuana in general. That started out as a problem a few years ago when folks began using medical marijuana to deal with the ravages of AIDS.
Mm, yeah.
And now it's mushroomed with marijuana, with the articles coming out about marijuana more and more being known about its use as a painkiller. More and more people have tried to use it and have tried it for pain relief. A lot of folks that try it are already on pain medications from their doctor. They're already on traditional medications, traditional opiates, or other semi-synthetics that deal with chronic pain conditions. What happens is the people use the marijuana and then either, one, report to their doctor that they used it and they've been able to decrease their opiates and can they somehow get it legally, at which point the doctor says, no, and I'm kicking you off all your medication and you're not going to be a patient of mine anymore because you're using street drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are in a pain clinic that tests people and somebody turns up positive for marijuana and then they get kicked off all their pain medication and kicked out of the clinic and stuff.
Yeah.
And a good part of what I've been doing lately is talking to doctors at pain clinics and trying to get people reinstated and trying to explain why people are doing what they're doing. And that's been a real challenge.
Yeah,
a real challenge.
I think what's maddening about this to me, most especially, is the studies now showing that and the anecdotal evidence we've heard from all these thousands of patients, like you mentioned, that the use of cannabis can help people to reduce their amount of opiate drug use. And of course, those opiate drugs are highly addictive and very toxic to the liver and other bodily functions. They have all sorts of terrible side effects. So in a sense, this witch hunt on cannabis users is in an effort to get people hooked on harder, more addictive drugs.
There's no question that there's just a tremendous irony here. I think the first study that I saw that confirmed what I had already heard, as you said, I mean, I've represented hundreds of medical marijuana patients at this point, and one of the stories that I hear the most often is, you know, Doug, I was disabled, I had a bad back, and they put me on, you know, opiates, they put me on morphine, and then I couldn't work, and, you know, then I started smoking a little marijuana, and I felt better, and I cut down my opiate use, and then I went back to work. You know, I hear that story over and over and over again, and there was a study out of Bard's Hospital in London that showed that you get the most effective pain relief there is from a combination of marijuana and morphine, and that in, you know, patients that are using morphine, when you allow them to use marijuana to help control the pain and some of the other symptoms, and it makes the morphine more effective, you can cut your morphine by 50% or more. There are patients that respond so well to medical marijuana that their opiate use can almost be cut out. And, you know, as you know, the more opiates you use, the worse it is. The more severe the side effects, the more severe the debilitation, the more severe, you know, the damage to your body. So if you can reduce the amount of opiates you're using in these people, you know, you gain everything. Plus, you know, quality of life. I cannot tell you how many times people will say, well, now I can eat again, or I can go to the bathroom again, or I can have sex again. I'm working again, because they're able to cut the opiate use down to a level where it's working for the pain, but it's not causing side effects. And cannabis is an amazing substance in terms of allowing people to do that. And I've heard that story thousands of times. Now, the issue is whether or not, you know, we can educate doctors and they can start to see this in their own practices, because there would be a tremendous benefit to everyone in this country if pain management was revolutionized with medical marijuana, because we have an epidemic of people dying of overdoses of pain medication. It's relatively easy to overdose on opiates. It's relatively easy to kill yourself by accident on a semi-synthetic or opiate-based pain medication. You add cannabis into the mix, and the doses are not high enough to get you to fatal levels anymore. And, of course, as we know, cannabis is the most safe drug there is, with no LD lethal dose 50 even computable for the drug. So, you know, that's a revolution that is waiting to happen in pain management if we can get, you know, doctors educated. And there are doctors out there that know this, are reading the research from foreign countries, and are moving in this direction. But, you know, they need help, and there's got to be a recognition that this is really, really important medicine, and an entirely new protocol needs to be developed for pain management.
Yeah. Now I understand that, you know, legally speaking, we're on shaky ground, you know, especially in the non-medical marijuana states. Of course, there's not a leg to stand on as far as the use of cannabis for medical purposes.
Sometimes if they've got, you know, I always encourage lawyers in non-medical marijuana states to look hard, because a lot of times there'll be a medical necessity law.
Yeah.
And if I've got a medical necessity law in a state where there's not a medical cannabis law, I'm fighting anyway.
Yeah, that's true. We saw that happen in Texas, didn't we?
Absolutely right. Great memory, Russ.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember that lawyer's name, but that guy in Texas went down there and tried it on a medical necessity theory and walked the guy right out of it.
Yeah.
Spend 2 minutes thinking about it.
Yeah, it was like 11 minutes for the jury to decide. And his name's Jeff, and I can't remember the last name, unfortunately. But, you know, what I was getting at, though, is that even in the medical marijuana states, we've got the problem, because the states will say that the marijuana is okay to use, but the feds don't. And, of course, the feds are who control the opiate prescriptions. And that's kind of the way they're getting to this this prohibition, or this kicking people off the pain clinics. I'm wondering legally, though, is there any sort of look at taking this on from a civil point, a civil lawsuit point, maybe from a malpractice point of view, in that if you have someone who's using pain medications and you force them to get off those medications, isn't that kind of cruel, unusual? You know, you're talking about withdrawals from opiates here.
Yeah, and I've been trying to explore that angle, and I've been talking to some doctors about that, and part of it, again, it's an education process, and it's going to be a best practices issue. But yeah, there is there's also a question here about, you know, the government requiring pain clinics, and the DEA, you know, requiring pain clinics to kick people off and stuff. I don't believe in any medical marijuana state. You know, we fight that, and I just don't believe they can do it. In California, it shouldn't be happening. It shouldn't be happening here in Washington, where I am. It shouldn't be happening in Oregon, where you are. Anywhere there's a medical marijuana state, that shouldn't be happening. And if it is, we should be going to court and making sure that Conant protects the doctors. And if we need to expand the protections of Conant to doctors, specifically to doctors in pain clinics under DEA threat, then we need to do that. We need to make sure that that's explicit. And maybe Graham Boyd and some of the lawyers that originally brought that case would think about doing that again, to make certain that in those states we can protect people. In states without the law, it's really difficult. And I have experienced that a couple of times trying to help people out in other states, Illinois, Idaho, Florida. The law is very, very draconian, and it's just absurd that, you know, we treat people in pain this way in this country. It's absolutely shameful.
Yeah.
There's something, you know, deeply rooted in this country that goes back to, you know, Puritanism or something, that we say, oh, well, pain, you know, you can manage it, or it somehow makes you a better person, or you grow from it, or some, you know, garbage like that. But that is just garbage. And anybody that's ever been in pain for any length of time, or experienced severe pain like a kidney stone, Imagine if you ever experienced a kidney stone, if you had that every day of your life. I mean, that's what these chronic pain patients, are experiencing. And, you know, they deserve our support and our sympathy, and they're just trying to have a life. And what we're doing is, you know, making pariahs out of them and treating them like drug addicts and treating them like criminals. And it's just awful. We need to rethink, you know, our entire approach to that area. There's no question. It's outrageous the way people have been treated over pain control issues.
Yeah. And this is even happening with doctors and patients that aren't involved with medical cannabis. There's reports of pain patients that have, or doctors that have gotten trouble because they've been alleged to be over-prescribing these opiates for people that are in severe pain. And again, it goes back to that prejudice against narcotics, against the use of drugs in general. And again, that puritanical idea that you should suck it up and be a man and handle your pain like a man or something like that.
Right. Some kind of idea like suffering is noble.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I've seen a lot of suffering and there's no nobility in it at all. I can tell you that. That may be in the movies and books, or that may be some kind of a myth or something, but in reality, I can tell you that when you're watching somebody just sitting there, you know, wasting away or whimpering in pain, it's awful.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the kidney stones. I suffered my first kidney stone this last March, and it gave me a new appreciation for the whole idea of pain, let me tell you.
Oh, I'm right with you there, brother. I've had them several times, and that's why I alluded to that. Once you have that level of pain, and then you think about somebody being in that level of pain all the time, every day for the rest of their life, and then you start, you know, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, and that's really, I think, the essence of what this is all about. We need to do a lot more of that in every way in this country, is put ourselves in each other's shoes once in a while, and really try and think about, well, wow, what would it be like to live like that? How would you, you know, how would you do it, and how would you maintain, you know, your sanity in that kind of pain, and how would you make your life meaningful facing that kind of pain? And it's just not a fair thing, and that we suffer that, but it's we need to be more enlightened and compassionate in our approach to people that are suffering like that, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unreasonable at this point, knowing what we know, knowing what the science is, that we're continuing to do these idiotic things.
Well, we'll keep on the education front here at the Daily Audio Stash and let everyone know the facts, the growing truth about cannabis. And Douglas Hyatt's an attorney up in Seattle, Washington, who's helping patients up there who have run afoul of these terrible draconian prohibition laws. Doug, thanks again for coming on the Stash, and good luck to you up there.
Anytime, Russ. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from Tom Robbins, the writer, who said, quote, "In 30 years of close observation, I've never seen an act of violence, aggression, jealousy, or egomania triggered by use of marijuana. In fact, marijuana seems to possess all of the benevolence, grace, clarity, insightfulness, and calm that the state-sanctioned drug, booze, so sadly lacks." End quote. Yes, it's something I always think about when we get around to these holiday seasons and folks are out there drinking up at the holiday parties and enjoying that eggnog. And invariably, we always have people that are dying in drinking-related crashes on the roads. So I want to remind you, if you are the kind of person who enjoys hard liquid drugs, be careful and make sure you get yourself a designated driver. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.